Welcome to Rebel Health Radio, bringing the best in alternative and integrative medicine to your ears. Hi everyone, it's Patricia Wolby from Alchemy Therapies and My Emotional Audit and The Scar That Won't Heal and all the other things that I do. And today I want to talk to you about loneliness in the age of social media. And I'm particularly inspired to do this by it's a video that I watched by Esther Perel talking to one of my other favorite women, who is Brené Brown. In fact, it's Esther because she's Belgian. She is a psychotherapist. She does a lot of work on relationships and couple counseling, but she's just one of the brightest and most interesting women talking on the online space, I would say, at the moment. We hear a lot from famous men who get together in groups of famous men and tend to talk about things that are very esoteric, let's say, very in-depth. And we get a lot of publicity for that. And, you know, if you're anything like me, your algorithm will point you to those kinds of conversations. So it's very rare to find one between two women who equally have something very deep and important to say. And I really wanted to, first of all, comment on that conversation and to kind of add in a few of my own ideas and thoughts about it. So it was a conversation recorded for the conference that happens every year. It's a social work conference. I think it's called SFSW or something, but and which could be San Francisco, I imagine. But it's the two women sat on the podium and having an unscripted, unrehearsed conversation, which I just found absolutely fascinating. I've watched it several times now because the words that come out of Esther's mouth are just so deeply thought through. She never blurts out. You'll notice when she's asked a question, there's a gap between the questioner asking and her responding. She always spends a moment just to gather herself before she answers. Here's what she had to say to the question of the rise of social media and what that means for society. And she says something like this. I'm paraphrasing and adding a few words of my own, but so never before have we encountered so much longing in society. Now, this is in response to a question from Brené about things not being on human scale anymore. You know, our culture, our friendship groups are, you know, online are huge. The people we have to compare ourselves with to is much bigger than ever we had in our real friendship groups. And the result of that, she believes, is this sense of longing, the yearning, the quest, the sheer need for connection, for community, for transcending the burdens of the self that have never been heavier. The burdens of the self that have never been heavier, okay? We're supposed to have all the answers within us, but the self-development movement has a lot to answer for in that scale. It's a good thing generally because it enables people to kind of transcend and learn and develop themselves, but it also puts a lot of burden on us individually. We for having freedom that is unprecedented. Okay, so we in the Western world, at least, we have a lot of freedom to travel, to connect, to work and live in places that we never would have before. You know, previous generations just wouldn't have had that freedom. But also unprecedented is living with a tyranny of doubt and uncertainty, right? The tyranny of doubt and uncertainty, because the self has to have all the answers. Now, if you're my age, you've come through quite a lot, you've learned a lot, you still don't know all the answers. And Esther herself says many times when she's asked these things, I might sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I still have doubts. You know, I still have to think things through. There's no substitute for real life and what it teaches you. But if you're like 14 and 15 and you're glued to a phone all day and you're using the kind of likes and the comments as your sense of self-esteem, this is skewed. This is new. We've never had this before. You would have had a range of people to talk to in your world. When I was growing up, you wouldn't just be referring to other people the same age. You would perhaps have your parents, you would have grandparents, you would have people in your community. That tends not to happen so much now because people literally are wired into the online communities. And so Esther calls this the AI as artificial intimacy. She's, called it something else. And she says all the experiences that we currently have are pseudo experiences, right? They should give us the feeling of something real, but they don't. It's not the same when somebody posts their life on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, wherever. It's a representation. It's not real, and it misses out the complexities and the doubts and the fears and the mistakes. Or, for instance, I'm talking to you about something deeply personal, and you're answering me, or you're on the phone, because you're doing something else, all right? You're not really taking care to listen. And, just pressing a thumbs up to somebody's post is so simple, but does it really mean you've engaged with them, that you really understand what they're doing? It's not equivalent. And so I should be feeling connected, open, vulnerable, but in fact, you're there, but you're not present. All right. So if I'm trying to have a conversation with you and you're distracted, you're there, but you're not present. And I'm feeling a certain kind of loneliness. It's a very distinct feeling because you're there. So it's not like I'm alone, but I don't have true connection. And what that has been termed, there's a lovely phrase called ambiguous loss. All right. Because instead of feeling connection with you, I'm actually in the process of grieving. Now, this is a term that was coined by Pauline Boss, another psychotherapist that Esther is quoting. And she's giving the example that in the situation where, say, and this happened to me, your mother or your parent has Alzheimer's and you're there with them and they're physically present, but psychologically or emotionally, they're not. And so you have this sense of grief, well, at loss, but you can't grieve it because it's the impossibility of grieving because they're there, but they're not there. And so when you're not really listening to me, it's the same feeling because you're focused on something else that you need to do. And how many of us, and I'm going to put my hand up here, find that we're doing this. When I was watching this last night, I was aware, I and my partner, we're both watching separate things. The days of watching a program together as a family are really gone. And we do, but it's much more likely we'll be doing our individual things on our phones. That's modern life, isn't it? So it's almost like you're disappeared in a way. So another example of ambiguous loss would be actually traumatization, So somebody is physically going through the motions, they're there, they're present with you, but they've shut down, they've dissociated because they're so overwhelmed emotionally by what's happened to them and they can't deal with it. And so they've shut their connection system, their attachment system down. So I deal with that all the time, getting people back into their bodies, finding ways to reconnect with their emotional sense of self. So the amount of loneliness that's present now because of this degree of trauma and this social media onslaught is huge. And it's not the same as the loneliness of being alone. It's the loneliness of being with people next to whom you should not be feeling lonely, but in fact you do. It also denies the importance of vulnerability, of messiness, of complexity, and unresolvable conundrums in interactions, because not everything is simple. In fact, most important relationships never really solve a problem. You can't solve a problem down to a right or wrong. You can manage the the complexity within it. So this is important to understand that you can't always be, online, of course, we're separated into tribes of I believe this, you believe the wrong thing. You know, if you don't believe what I believe, we see this a lot in online discussions. There's no meeting of minds to discuss the complexity of the issues. We assume we're in our rigid tribes. And if you don't agree with me, you're stupid. All right. And I've seen this, I've had this happen online this week with something that I believe and the other person doesn't believe and been told, well, I was called a video, a YouTube shill, I think was the word. So, like, you know, I'm here just to explore what I believe. I'm not here to set it rigidly in stone and say my beliefs are right and yours are definitely wrong. And that's where this division, this separation, this polarization that we're seeing is coming from. So social media is actually driving that. And so this is very difficult to resolve when you haven't got a person in front of you who's really present and willing to negotiate, willing to communicate and really listen with you, even if they don't agree, for you to find a common meeting place in that conversation. So she's saying, living in a contactless world, there's very little friction. There's very little of this kind of meeting of minds in order to create something new. See, if everything is supposed to be polished and glossed, then you don't get to experience experimentation, doubt, friction, conflict. You know, that a part of what Terry Real calls fierce intimacy, all right? You're willing to engage in the difficult places that you don't agree or that you have a different opinion on. And Brené calls that counterfeit connection. So it's another phrase, you know. You have this pretend connection, but it's not real. It doesn't feel real. Your heart doesn't resonate with it. Okay. It just feels very surface and it feels very defended and attacking. And so this is the world we inhabit now. Esther also said that modern loneliness masks as hyperconnectivity. And Brené asked her to repeat that. So I'm going to, modern loneliness masks as hyperconnectivity. So we have more and more people that we're connected to, supposedly, but fewer and fewer true connections. Because we spend all our time online, we're not actually talking to each other, all right? So she gives the example. I have 1,000 virtual friends, but nobody to feed my cat. You know, if I can't, if I'm on holiday or I can't. I've nobody to pick up a prescription for me at the pharmacy, but 1,000 people who are giving me likes and dislikes and all kinds of things that are now becoming the foundation of my self-esteem. All right. I get 1,000 likes for a post. I'm okay. All right. If nobody or very few people or not as many as my friends' posts, particularly if I'm a teenage girl, because teenage girls are wired to compare themselves with other members of their tribe, you know, boys less so, but they also cycle down into depression because there's too many people to compete with now. So it's about being misunderstood, unseen, rejected, ostracized. These are the feelings that go with this kind of false counterfeit connection. Because real interactions and real people require a ton of vulnerability, of tension, of friction, and messiness. And she talks about bids for connection, missed bids for connections. You know, we try, we're having an argument or we're having a disagreement, but I might offer to make you a cup of tea. You know, that's a bid for connection, you know. Or I might say, do you know, you're right, I see what you're saying. I'm circling back, or I shouldn't have said that. I'm apologizing. You know, these are ways in which real people negotiate the act of compromise of communication. Never before have we commodified and commercialized our personal experiences to such a degree, to such a degree that sometimes instead of living life, we're living experiences of which the value will only come once we've posted it. Okay. Can we be at a concert and listen to the music without actually having to see it through the phone and record it? You see this in concerts, you know, people just recording the whole thing and they're looking at the through the phone. They're not actually present. They think they are because they're physically in the building, but they're not focusing with their heart and their mind. And Brené comments that it's like our new body. It feels things, you know, upset, you know, little emoji. It consumes things. Here's my meal. Instead of us. So it's like we've dissociated our body onto our phone. And Esther gives another example of being on a subway. She travels, she lives in New York City, and she said there's not a single person lifting their head anymore. I've noticed that. You know, when I go in the morning to the bus stop, well, everyone is down here. You know, nobody is looking around them, listening or engaging with each other. And if you do engage someone now with eye contact, they quickly go back down because it's almost scary to make eye contact with people now. And so, where is the happenstance? Where is the serendipity and spontaneity of human experience? Now, I'll give you an example. Last night, I went out for a walk. It was a nice evening. I happened to walk past a local pub near where I live, and a guy is carrying something which looks to me like a violin or a musical instrument of some kind. And I say, "Oh, what are you playing tonight?" Because they do have live music there. And he looks at me, and there's a beat. There's a moment where he's not quite sure why I've asked him that, and then his brain cogitates a little bit, and he realizes I've made an error, assuming he's carrying an instrument, and actually it turns out to be an air rifle, in a case, you know, all zipped up. So it does look very much like some weird violin or something. And I laugh and say, "Oh, I thought it was an instrument," because obviously that was my assumption. And there's this moment of connection, all right? And he shakes his head and says, No. You know, this is a club. They have a meeting for people with air rifles. It's an interesting pub. But that's a real example, I suppose, of connection and messiness, because I made a mistake, and yet it made me laugh, because it made me chuckle, because it made me realize that we do make assumptions. And so, if we're with people and we're not actually connecting, you know, this is a pseudo connection. It's exactly what is being described here. And so, is it any wonder we have a mental health crisis? Because that kind of loneliness and disconnect does creep up on you, and it is additive and it's cumulative. And particularly if you're young and your brain is still growing, developing, connection really matters, okay? The neuroscience of the brain is that it really responds to its environment. And if its environment is this closed down, pseudo anxious environment where you've got to compete with thousands of people that you don't know, and you don't know what the assumptions are that you're making, you will start to feel anxious and depressed. Okay. And so the mental health crisis we're experiencing, is it that we're seeing higher levels of mental instability, or is it a normal reaction, if you like, a normal response to a crisis situation in our society? And I would say it's the latter. And I think Gabor Mate agrees, and he's written a book about it, his recent book, you know. So I think we have to acknowledge that when we're sitting with people and we're not connected, we're basically ghosting them. And we're losing the ability to pay attention deeply to things. It has to be 2 seconds, 3 seconds, or we're gone. I notice, I look at my YouTube stats every now and again, and I look at how long people manage to get through my videos, and the vast majority make it 20 seconds, you know. Is it because I'm boring? Possibly. I'm not their thing. Maybe that's true, that's okay. But we do see that people are not willing to give things a go to the same degree you would be with maybe a TV program or a conversation, a true, real conversation. And so, if you lose the ability to pay attention, we're also going to get these kind of ADHD type symptoms because our brain is craving connection, so it'll flit around until it can find something that feels connected. And so it's no surprise we're seeing a rise in that kind of experience as well. You see, the antidote to loneliness is connection, is somebody being singularly focused and listening to you and present for you. They may not have to say anything, it's the quality of their being. And you know, when someone is like that with you, it causes your nervous system to respond in equal measure, all right? And so the listening is not just what happens to the person who listens. The listening is what shapes what the person will tell. This is a quote from Esther, okay? It shapes what you will reveal if someone is willing to listen to you and be present for you. So the listener creates the speaker. It's a mutual exploration, it's a mutual dance of vulnerability. And so the openness that I'm able to share will dictate what you will divulge, you know, how you connect and how vulnerable you can be. And so that's what I'm doing here when I'm posting, all right? I'm making myself vulnerable. I've made myself vulnerable this week, and I've been, you know, I'm often attacked for it because someone disagrees or someone thinks I shouldn't have said this or that. But here I am admitting I sometimes make mistakes. I do. I make errors of judgment. That's okay. I'm learning. And one of the reasons why I decided to record this today, apart from obviously having watched this brilliant discussion, which I've only really summarized a brief part of, is that every month I seek to create a space where people can come together and truly connect. And I call it my community program. And it's low cost, it's £12 at the moment to attend. You get a little bit of me setting the scene, if you like, discussing something, a little presentation, 5 or 6 slides to raise an issue that I think is important. Today I'm doing one on calming the nervous system. I'm going to talk a little bit about what the nervous system truly is, okay? Because we might have learned in school that it connects our organs and relays information from our brain and vice versa, but we don't really understand it, not truly. The nervous system is far more than that. It tunes into your experience, okay? And that's not just the outer experience, that's your inner experience, what you feel, think, particularly what you feel, all right? Your emotions, which are a real-time readout of your kind of vibration. And so I wanted to create a community of people that could truly listen and be present with each other. And that's what I do once a month on a Wednesday, 4 p.m. UK time. I chose that time because it's possible then for US people and hopefully for people around the world. But the presentation is recorded. So even if you can't attend live, the presentation is there. I don't record the discussion, but I do summarize it in the recording. So that people can talk openly without the fear of they'll be on my YouTube channel. But the recordings are not posted generally. They're posted privately as an unlisted. So only people who kind of join in get the link. So if that's something you would like to take part in, by the way, you don't have to talk. You can keep your video off. You can listen only. But obviously, the more people that are willing to be vulnerable, the more courageous we all feel. And so I'd really encourage you, if you'd like to join in, to click on the link. I'll include it in the description below to my website and join in the community program. It's every month on a Wednesday, 4 p.m. UK time. People, I hope this was useful for you. I wish you a good day, a good week, a good month. And take care of yourselves out there. All right. Bye for now. Bye. Hey, hope you enjoyed listening to Rebel Health Radio. Do subscribe and look forward to catching you soon.